From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the governor releases his $142 billion state budget proposal. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts about the plan, and we'll get the results of a long-awaited IBM workplace health study. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo released his state budget this week. The $142 billion spending plan includes more money for schools, including a phase-in of funding for universal pre-kindergarten programs. It would also freeze property taxes for 2 years if local governments cooperate. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
The governor's budget, which includes a 3% increase in school aid, a 2-year property tax freeze, and phased-in business tax cuts, offers something for everyone in a year where Cuomo and all 213 members of the legislature are up for re-election.
It's not a package that has been put together to provoke. It's a package that has been put together to pass.
Cuomo offered more details of a $2 billion education bond act to go before voters in November. It would in part pay for better internet access and iPads. And Cuomo announced a plan for universal pre-kindergarten in New York to be phased in over the next 5 years and worth $1.5 billion when it's fully funded.
The state will pay for it, and the state will be proud to pay for it. It's a priority. We believe in children. We believe in pre-K. We believe in education. Let's put our money where our mouth is, and let's make it a reality.
Cuomo's pre-K proposal could solve a conundrum for the governor. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio campaigned on providing universal pre-kindergarten. He wanted to fund it by a new tax he's seeking on wealthy New Yorkers. But Cuomo has said he does not want to raise taxes this year. By providing a funding plan, the governor could resolve the issue. But Mayor de Blasio, speaking before the budget presentation, seemed reluctant to give up on his plan to use a dedicated tax revenue source to fund pre-K.
I have a mandate from the people to pursue this plan, and I'm going to pursue this plan. And of course, we'll be respectful and communicative, but this is the plan that will work for the people of the city.
Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver suggests a compromise. He says perhaps pre-K could be funded in part by both sources, state funding and an additional tax on the wealthy.
Maybe a tax would only be needed for part of what's overall needed. You have to see the plan.
The governor also detailed his tax cut plans. New Yorkers making up to $500,000 a year would get a credit on their income taxes if their local governments and schools hold spending to below 2% a year. They would also have to agree to consolidate services in the second year of the plan.
It's an opportunity to fundamentally address the structural cause of high property taxes.
A cut in business taxes, including the corporate tax rate, and a lower estate tax would be phased in between now and 2017. In fact, many of the proposals in the budget do not fully take effect for several more years. The state does not currently have enough money to pay for them all. But the governor and his budget officials believe that if they continue to hold spending to 2% a year or lower, the state will have an over $2 billion surplus in 3 years, enough to pay for the tax cuts, pre-kindergarten, and other programs. The leader of the Republicans in the state Senate, Dean Skello, says he'd like to see the tax cuts happen even faster.
To stimulate this economy and move it in the right direction, if there are ways that we can accelerate things, I think it is what we should do.
The governor also called for ethics reform. reform in his budget. He includes public campaign financing, though he did not name a dollar amount or identify a funding source. He says he does want $5.3 million to fund an independent enforcement unit to police campaign violations. He says the string of indictments, arrests, and investigations of lawmakers is tarnishing everyone.
It's a drip, drip, drip of these negative one-off stories. And it has to be addressed.
And even though it's not exactly a spending item, the governor called for legislation to fix the troubled implementation of the new Common Core standards in schools, saying the rollout by the State Board of Regents has been flawed. Cuomo also called for a ban on standardized testing of school children in kindergarten through the second grade. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, Governor Andrew Cuomo delivered his budget proposal this week, and with it comes an impending fight over the funding of pre-K.
Well, pre-K has become a huge issue in New York State, but what's really going on is a fight between the left wing of the party, and there are many Democrats who fit into that quite well, and the more conservative purple rather than blue governor of New York, who believes we should be cutting taxes, which is a very popular program. I mean, you know, if you're living in a little house on Long Island or in Westchester and you're paying $20,000 in taxes, that's really oppressive. And the governor knows it. They poll, they find that. On the other hand, out comes de Blasio, who says, we got to tax the rich more. There's inequity going on, and there certainly is. And there's a growing distance between the rich and the poor. And I want pre-K, and I want a change in law so that pre-K is funded in New York City. Cuomo comes back. He talks to the New York Times. He says, I want it for everybody in the state. He pulls the rug out from under de Blasio and tries to make it his issue now. And he said, we'll give anything that they want to them for pre-K. So now you have this sort of similar fight in the Democratic Party between the proper left and the conservative Democrats, which we've always had, and its faction. And then, on the other hand, you have the Tea Party and the moderate Republicans who are duking it out in the other party. So we see that the pre-K becomes a sort of a shorthand for the fight. Andrew Cuomo is a master politician. So some people, I'm included in that group, call him Machiavellian. I think Machiavelli would be proud. He's a great chess player. He knows how to sit there. De Blasio puts pre-K forward. He comes back and robs him of the issue and says, we'll take pre-K and we'll do it for you. And we'll give you anything you want for it, he tells the New York Times. He sits with the New York Times for 90 minutes. The New York Times then endorses his position and says, de Blasio would be wise to take him up on it. So now we see, I don't know how to put this, but institutional fighting. The New York Times, what is its philosophy, which is to expediently take care of problems, make sure that everybody has a little, and they always have taken that position. And Cuomo wins them over, and de Blasio is left sort of hanging a bit.
As you look at it right now, who wins this fight?
Well, I think right now de Blasio, the new mayor, has a lot going for him because the soul of the Democratic Party is always equality. And Cuomo is counting on the fact that he can be elected overwhelmingly, and the polls are showing this, with the purples, the people who are not quite pure blue but who are sitting in the middle. The guy on Long Island who has that house, who's paying $20,000 in taxes, who may say, I can't afford that. I can vote Republican sometimes. I can vote Democratic. But I like what this guy Cuomo is saying. And on the other hand, you get the absolute brigades of Democrats who have been raised on the rhetoric of FDR and others who think that there has to be more taxation in order to create more of a sense of equality.
You spoke to the head of the Republican Party in New York State, Ed Cox, this week, and the governor's budget proposal is big on supporting business through reducing taxes, and he wasn't completely supportive of some of the governor's proposals.
Well, David, in order to understand Ed Cox, who is, of course, a nice man, I have liked him for a long time, but he is the loyal opposition, so he gets caught in a dilemma. Does he support the Democratic governor who is really veering right towards him? Or does he say, it's all mirrors and things of that kind, and he does that? He's the opposition. He's supposed to have a candidate who's going to run against Cuomo. He talks about Donald Trump. It's ridiculous. Donald Trump isn't going to run for governor, he'd get killed, I believe, in an election. He talks about Astorino in Westchester County, who did very well and is among Democrats. He's a Republican, but he doesn't really show well in the polls right now. And to which Ed Cox says, well, it's early. And Cox has got his hands full trying to keep the Republican flag flying in an increasingly blue Democratic state with a governor who knows how to rob him of his people. He puts his hand right into the Republican pot, says, I'm going to reduce taxes. What are the Republicans going to say? We're against that. So what they say is it's not real.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The governor's budget address received some mixed reviews from New York's North Country and Adirondack interests this week. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
Governor Andrew Cuomo laid out a number of initiatives during his budget address in Albany. Plattsburgh Mayor Independent James Calnon found the most important was the tax package.
Most of it is stuff that I think is very good for the North Country, and I think things that will be very effective in helping us continue to grow our economy. The corporate tax reductions, in particular the manufacturing reductions, even more important. We've really kind of stemmed the tide of most communities that have been rapidly losing manufacturing, and we're kind of going in the other direction. So I think that the tax package is one that's very favorable to us.
But the mayor is dubious about the governor's plan to freeze property taxes.
The basic freeze on taxes is really shifting taxes from property taxes to the other taxes that New York State collects, not really getting at the root causes, which is really the spending. Now, the second half of it, where he starts to talk about if we can not only keep taxes under the cap, but then really start to show real savings, which he thinks we can accomplish through consolidation, we really need to take a look at.
Governor Cuomo gave an overview of his executive budget, then left the stage, allowing his commissioners to fill in details. New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Joe Martens explained the environmental and parks portion of the executive budget, which includes an increase in the State Environmental Protection Fund.
Last year, for its 20th anniversary, we increased the funding substantially to the EPF. This budget reaffirms our commitment with an $157 million appropriation.
But Adirondack Council Executive Director Willie Janeway is disappointed at that funding level.
The Adirondack Council and I and others support an Environmental Protection Fund. That's the state's dedicated trust fund with set tax revenue that goes into it of $200 million per year. It used to be over that. We're working to restore it to that level. This proposal provides a $157 million EPF, which is a good level of funding and a partial restoration that was actually approved last year. But in another place in the budget, there appears to be some reductions that in net actually reduces the funding for clean water for the Adirondacks. And we're very concerned there won't be the restoration needed for invasive species, wastewater treatment plant, and other environmental infrastructure and community grants across the state.
Although agriculture was ignored in the speeches, it is among the budget documents. New York Farm Bureau Director of Public Policy Jeff Williams is positive after an initial review.
I've gone through tentatively the budget appropriations and language for agriculture, and he really did make a good start. He fully funded a number of important agricultural programs. There's still some work to do with the legislature on some programs, but overall, it's a very good start. And we're also very happy that he included a proposal to increase the estate tax threshold in New York State, which is something we've been calling for years. That would help new farmers transition into farm operations and not have to sell off farmland in order to pay the tax man when the estate tax bill comes.
The New York Senate and Assembly will begin a series of joint budget hearings next Monday.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo delivered his budget address this week amid criticism from Republicans over comments about the conservative wing of the Grand Old Party. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has a follow-up.
Although he later claimed his remarks made Friday were taken out of context, Cuomo's words seemed to remove the welcome mat from the Empire State's doorstep. Speaking generally about moderate politicians' historical power in the state, Cuomo said, quote, that right to life, pro-assault weapons, anti-gay, if that's who they are, they have no place in the state of New York because that's not who New Yorkers are. Republican State Chairman Ed Cox.
That is an insult to a large portion of the population of New York State. He's already driven enough people out of the state by his policies with respect to business. And this is the least business-friendly state in the United States. People are leaving the state in droves looking for jobs. Now he's driving people out on ideological grounds just because they disagree with him.
Cox has called on Cuomo to apologize to New York's good conservatives and Catholics. The Cuomo administration attempted damage control Sunday, putting out a statement saying the governor does not think conservatives should leave the state and later citing the governor's gun ownership and religious faith. But come Monday, Westchester County executive and possible gubernatorial candidate Rob Astorino took advantage of the holiday, declaring Cuomo's statement, quote, the kind of intolerance that is directly opposite to what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. preached. Poughkeepsie's Republican Mayor John Tysik believes one should always think before one speaks.
Telling anyone who has a belief in the right to life or the Second Amendment that they're not welcome or unwanted here, I think is divisive and unnecessary. It's really showing a lack of leadership. There's free speech in New York. New York is a very tolerant state. And quite frankly, the governor should probably choose his words more wisely.
WAMC's political commentator Alan Shartok counters, every time this governor does anything, he thinks it through.
When it comes to the attack on the conservatives, I think that is well thought through because basically they ain't going to vote for him anyway. So, he knows what he's doing, and he has to shore up his left wing, which have not always been as pro-Andrew as he might like.
Possible GOP gubernatorial contender Donald Trump seems to agree. He told a New York City media outlet it's hard to believe that Cuomo really believes what he himself said on Friday. Though still widely popular in polls, Cuomo has lost some backing from the right after passage of the SAFE Act a year ago.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Officials from the federal government were in Endicott this week for a public meeting on a long-awaited IBM workplace health study. They examined cancer and other disease rates among 34,000 former workers spanning three decades at the company's plant in Endicott, New York. The Innovation Trail's Matt Richman reports.
Like many in Endicott, Wanda Hudak has a long history with IBM. There's a clear view of the company's campus, now the Huron campus, from the garden in her backyard. She's lived in Endicott her whole life, worked at IBM as a nurse during the 70s, before becoming the town's representative on the county legislature.
I'm a real hard-nosed, I love Endicott girl, okay? My dad worked in the Endicott Johnson factory. My mom was a wonderful seamstress, made a good living doing that. I went to school at Union Endicott.
Hudak is president of the Western Broome Environmental Stakeholders Coalition, the group that began lobbying years ago for a study of disease rates among former workers. She spent much of her life confronting injuries and diseases at the plant.
As a nurse, when you tell me that you found non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I see the woman that walked in my first aid and asked me to check the lump under her arm. She's dead now. When you tell me cancer, I think of my neighbor.
While the study, conducted by the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, did not make a direct link between the IBM plant and the deaths of former workers, it did find elevated rates of certain cancers and neurological diseases. Hudak wasn't surprised by those findings. She says now she's just disappointed in IBM for refusing to take responsibility and make things right in Endicott.
It kills me every time I go back. And I think, you know, in the Watson days, you could walk past here over that bridge, McKinley Avenue Bridge, and I used to walk with pride. I was an IBM industrial nurse, and I loved it.
The study looked at the health records of 34,494 workers who were employed at the plant between 1969 and 2001. An IBM spokesman declined to be interviewed about the study's findings. Researchers did find a lower percentage of cancer deaths among workers at the Endicott plant than in the overall population. That's not surprising, says Richard Clapp, a retired Boston University epidemiologist.
And that's because the general population includes people too sick to work. So the death rates are inevitably going to be higher in that population than they will be in working people.
It's what's known as the healthy worker effect. Clapp says it's worth noting that the study still found increased rates of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, rectal cancer, and certain neurological diseases. Two of the chemicals used at the plant, known as TCE and PCE, have long been a source of concern among Endicott residents. Clapp says the study is being watched worldwide in places where these chemicals are still used.
A lot of these printed circuit and especially semiconductor manufacturing operations have moved overseas. For example, right now in Korea is a major effort to get Samsung to use safer chemicals in the semiconductors that they're manufacturing.
Decaf, and there's a couple flavors here.
At his coffee shop across North Street from Building 18, Mark Bacon is watching too. He's one of the many Endicott residents who has had to install a venting system in his basement. A spill of TCE and PCE underneath Building 18 and the spread of fumes into basements is what first caused widespread concerns about the chemicals used at the plant.
This is ground zero of the spill.
Bacon's building stands all alone. All his neighbors were bought out, the building's torn down, and replaced with parking lots. But the previous owner refused to sell when IBM first came around. An IBM successor, Endicott Interconnect, offered him much less. Now he's stuck.
I would have been out of here day one. I tried to tell him just what I had in the building, and I'm gone.
Bacon's part of a lawsuit against IBM. He says he's gotten a letter from his lawyer once a year for 12 years now, telling him to be patient. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Richman for the Innovation Trail.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1404 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.